Chapter 26 Senate. I had just had time to absorb the words when Agia jumped from her chair, snatched the note from my hand, and threw it over the edge of the platform. For a moment she stood before me, looking from my face to Terminus Est, which by this time leaned, reassembled, against an arm of the couch. I think she feared I was going to strike off her head and throw it after the note. When I did nothing, she said, "Did you read it?"
"Severian, say you didn't!"
"I read it, but I don't understand it."
"Then don't think about it."
"Be calm for a moment. It wasn't even meant for me. It may have been for you, but if it was, why was it put where no one but I could see it? Agia, have you had a child? How old are you?"
23.
"That's plenty old enough, but no, I haven't. I'll let you look at my belly if you don't believe me." I tried to make a mental calculation and discovered I did not know enough about the maturation of women. "When did you menstruate first?"
13. "If I'd got pregnant, I would have been 14 when the baby came. Is that what you're trying to find out?"
"Yes. And the child would be 9 now. If it were bright, it might be able to write a note like that. Do you want me to tell you what it said?"
"No!"
"How old would you say Dorcas is? 18? 19, perhaps?"
"You shouldn't think about it, Severian, whatever it was. I won't play games with you now.
You're a woman. How old?"
Agia pursed her full lips.
"I'd say your drab little mystery's 16 or 17. Hardly more than a child." Sometimes, as I suppose everyone has noticed, talking of absent persons seems to summon them up like eidolons. So it was now. A panel of the screen swung back and Dorcas came out, no longer the muddy creature we had become accustomed to, but a round-breasted, slender girl of singular grace. I have seen skin whiter than hers, but that was not a healthy whiteness. Dorcas seemed to glow. Freed of filth, her hair was pale gold. Her eyes were as they had always been, the deep blue of the world river Ouroboros in my dream. When she saw that Agia was naked, she tried to return to the shelter of the screen, but the thick body of the scullion prevented her. Agia said,
"I had better put my rags on again before your pet faints."
Dorcas murmured,
"I won't look."
"I don't care if you do,"
Agia told her. But I noticed she turned her back to us while she put on her gown. Speaking to the wall of leaves, she added,
"Now we really must go, Severian. The trumpet will sound at any moment."
"And what will that mean?"
"You don't know?"
She swung about to face us.
"When the machinations of the city wall appear to touch the edge of the solar disk, a trumpet, the first, is sounded on the sanguinary field. Some think it's only to regulate the combats there, though that's not so. It is a signal to the guards inside the wall to close the gates. It's also the signal to begin the fighting. And if you're there when it blows, that's when your contest will start. When the sun is below the horizon and true night comes, a trumpeter on the wall sounds tattoo. That means the gates will not be opened again, even for those who carry special passes, and also that anyone who, having given or received a challenge, has not yet come to the field, is assumed to have refused satisfaction. He can be assaulted wherever he is found. And an armiger or an exultant can engage assassins without soiling his honor. The scullion, who had been standing by the stair listening to all this and nodding, moved aside for her master, the innkeeper.
"Sir," he said, "if you indeed have a mortal appointing, I..."
"That is just what my friend was saying," I told him. "We must go." Dorcas asked then if she might have some wine. Somewhat surprised, I nodded. The innkeeper poured her a glass, which she held in both hands like a child. I asked him if he supplied riding implements for his guests.
"You wish to make a testament, sir? Come with me. We have a bowel reserved for that purpose. There's no charge, and if you like, I will engage a boy who'll carry the document to your executor."
I picked up Terminus Est and followed him, leaving Agia and Dorcas to keep watch in the Avern. The bower our host boasted of was perched on a small limb and hardly big enough to hold a desk. But there was a stool there, several crow quill pens, paper, and a pot of ink. I sat down and wrote out the words of the note. So far as I could judge, the paper was the same as that on which it had been written, and the ink gave the same faded black line. When I had sanded my scribble, folded it, and tucked it away in a compartment of my saber tash I seldom used, I told the innkeeper no messenger would be required, and asked if he knew anyone named Trudeau.
"Trudeau, sir."
He looked puzzled. "Yes, it's a common enough name."
"Surely it is, sir, I know that. It's just that I was trying to think of somebody that might be known to me, and somebody, if you understand me, sir, in your exalted position, some armiger or..."
"Anyone," I said. "Anyone at all. It would not, for example, be the name of the waiter who served us, would it?"
"No, sir. His name's Owen. I had a neighbor once named Trudeau, sir, but that was years ago, before I bought this place. I don't suppose it would be him you're after? Then there's my ostler here. His name's Trudeau."
"I'd like to speak to him." The innkeeper nodded, his chin vanishing in the fat that circled his neck.
"As you wish, sir. Not that he's likely to be able to tell you much."
The steps creaked beneath his weight.
"He's from far south, I warn you."
He meant the southern regions of the city, not the wild and largely treeless lands abutting on the ice.
"And from across the river to boot. You're not likely to get much sense from him, though he's a hard-working fellow."
I said, "I suspect I know what part of the city he comes from."
"Do you now? Well, that's interesting, sir. Very interesting. I've heard one or two say they could tell such things by the way a man dressed or how he spoke. But I wasn't aware you'd laid eyes on Trudeau, as the saying is."
We were nearing the ground now, and he bawled,
"Trudeau! Trudeau!"
And then,
"Rains!"
No one appeared. A single flagstone the size of a large tabletop had been laid at the foot of the stair, and we stepped out upon it. It was just at that moment when lengthening shadows cease to be shadows at all and become instead pools of blackness, as if some fluid, darker even than the waters of the Lake of Birds, was rising from the ground. Hundreds of people, some alone, some in small groups, were hurrying over the grass from the direction of the city. All seemed intent, bowed by an eagerness they carried upon their backs and shoulders like a pack. Most bore no weapons I could see, but a few had cases of rapiers, and at some distance off I made out the white blossom of an avern, carried, it seemed, on a pole or staff, just as mine was.
"Pity they won't stop here,"
the innkeeper said.
"Not that I won't get some of them coming back. But a dinner before is where the money is. I speak frankly, for I can see that young as you are, sir, you're too sensible not to know that every business is run to make a profit. I try to give good value. And as I've said, we've a famous kitchen. Throw the hole! I have to have one, for no other sort of food will agree with me. I'd starve, sir, if I had to eat what most do. Trudeau, you louse farm, where are you?
A dirty boy appeared from somewhere behind the trunk, wiping his nose on his arm.
He's not back there, master.
Well, where is he? Go look for him.
I was still watching the streaming hundreds. They are all going to the sanguinary field, then. For the first time, I think I fully realized that I was liable to die before the moon shone. Accounting for the note seemed futile and childish.
Not all to fight, you understand. Most are only going to watch. There's some come only once, because somebody they know's fighting, or just because they were told about it, or read about it, or heard a song. Usually those get taken ill, because they come here and generally put away a bottle or so when they're getting over it. But there's others that come every night, or anyway 4 or 5 nights out of the week. They're specialist, and only follow one weapon, or perhaps two, and they pretend to know more about those than them that use them, which perhaps some do. After your victory, sir, 2 or 3 will want to buy you a round. If you let them, they'll tell you what you did wrong and what the other man did wrong. But you'll find they don't agree.
I said, "Our dinner is to be private." And as I spoke, I heard the whisper of bare feet on the steps behind us. Adjia and Dorcas were coming down, Adjia carrying the Avern, which seemed to me to have grown larger in the failing light. I have already told you how strongly I desired Adjia. When we are talking to women, we talk as though love and desire are two separate entities. And women, who often love us and sometimes desire us, maintain the same fiction. The fact is that they are aspects of the same thing, as I might have talked to the innkeeper of the north side of his tree and the south. If we desire a woman, we soon come to love her for her condescension in submitting to us. This, indeed, had been the original foundation of my love for Thecla. And since, if we desire her, she always submits in imagination, at least, some element of love is ever present. On the other hand, if we love her, we soon come to desire her, since attraction is one of the attributes a woman should possess. And we cannot bear to think she is without any of them. In this way, men come to desire even women whose legs are locked in paralysis, and women to desire those men who are impotent, save with men like themselves. But no one can say from what it is that what we call, almost at our pleasure, love or desire is born. As Adjia came down the stair, one side of her face was lit by the last light of day, and the other thrown into shadow. Her skirt split nearly to the waist, permitted a flash of silken thigh, and all I had lost in feeling for her a few moments before, when I had pushed her away, came back doubled and doubled again. She saw that in my face, I know, and Dorcas, hardly a step behind her, saw it too and looked away. But Adjia was angry with me still, as perhaps she had a right to be. So although she smiled for policy's sake, and could not have concealed the ache in her loins if she would, yet she withheld much. I think it is in this that we find the real difference between those women to whom, if we are to remain men, we must offer our lives, and those who, again, if we are to remain men, we must overpower and outwit if we can, and use as we never would a beast. That the second will never permit us to give them what we give the first. Adjia enjoyed my admiration and would have been moved to ecstasy by my caresses. But even if I were to pour myself into her 100 times, we would part strangers. I understood all this as she descended the last few steps, one hand closing the bodice of her gown, the other upholding the Averne, whose pole she used as a staff and carried like a bacchus. And yet I loved her still, or would have loved her if I could. The boy came running up.
"Trudeau's gone, cook says. She was out fetching water 'cause the girl was gone, and seen him running off, and his things is gone from the mews, too."
"Gone for good, then," the innkeeper said. "When did he go, just now?"
The boy nodded.
"He heard you were looking for him, sir. That's what I'm afraid of. One of the others must have heard you asking me about the name and run and told him. Did he steal from you?"
I shook my head. He did me no harm, and I suspect he was trying to do good in whatever he did do. "I'm sorry I cost you a servant."
The innkeeper spread his hands. "He'd some wages coming, so I won't lose by it."
As he turned away, Dorcas whispered,
"And I am sorry to have taken your joy from you upstairs. I would not have deprived you. But, Severian, I love you."
From somewhere not far off, the silver voice of a trumpet called to the renascent stars.